Recently, I did a poll of coaches, and the number one complaint of coaches, the answer to what is the biggest struggle that you're facing? Getting clients. Why is getting clients for coaching so difficult or seem so difficult? It's not because the clients aren't out there. It's not because you don't have the skills or capacity or capability. The biggest reason is because you're talking one language and they're talking another. You're talking about the root problems that they have. You're talking about the certifications. You're talking about your life experiences that make you qualified to be their coach. They are looking for a solution to the problem they know they have. You see, you guys aren't talking about the same thing. They're talking about their surface level problem. And you're talking about the root cause. It might be that you guys aren't even talking at all, that you're not putting the right content out in the right places to speak to the clients that you're looking for. What is the solution? Well, my friend, you need an interpreter. I happen to be a lonely adrenal interpreter endotype. One of the gifts that I have is to be able to talk to you about your coaching business, help you identify your brand concept, help to see where your messaging is off, and help you to describe your business and what you do, who you do it for, answer all those questions in a way that's digestible. See, you're too close, the same way I get too close to my business, and I need to hire help to do the exact same thing. Because when we're too close, we can't see where our message isn't landing well. I want to be your business best friend. I want to talk to you and help you find an answer to the question, what do you do? I want to help you find website copy that converts. I want to help you design a website that's not only beautiful, but doesn't scare away your clients because it's out of alignment with who you are. Friend, if you want to talk, I'm here to talk. Let's set up a conversation, drop into the show notes, find my Calendly link, and book a call for free with me. Because this year, I want you to get clients.
This is the Raving Coaches Podcast, where we get real about the business of coaching. Here our guests discuss the gifts and joys of coaching and their struggles, challenges, and lessons. Now, here's our host, Laura Holloman.
Some of you may or may not know, but I am an autism mom. I have my son, who's 15, is neurodivergent. He's on the autism spectrum with an anxiety disorder and some OCD tendencies. He's 15 and he is 6'3" and he is giant. And he is the funniest child I have ever met. Today, on this episode of the podcast, we get to talk to Samantha, who works with neurodivergent kids in music therapy and works with parents who have kids who are neurodivergent to be able to help them understand their kids better, have support and a community, have people to ask questions to. I love the work that Samantha is doing. This episode is coming out the very first week of April, which is all about autism awareness. So we're going to ask you for a very special favor in that you share this episode. So if you're listening to this, please continue to listen. But in every one of the apps, there is a way to hit the little share button, which is looks mostly like a little square with a little arrow, right? You share and post it on your social media. Post it, send it to a friend in a message. This conversation needs to be heard by those people in your life who have a child who's neurodivergent. And we're going to get into this, but that means ADHD, ADD, oppositional defiance disorder, a little OCD. Maybe you don't know what the name of their quirkiness is. Maybe you just know their kid seems a little quirky. It's okay. Share this episode. One of the things that Samantha does is help parents who are like, I think there's maybe something with my kid, but we don't have a name for it yet, to be able to work through the process of getting a name for it. And the diagnosis and the resources and the help and the support and the community. This episode is near and dear to my heart. And I'm getting choked up again. I got choked up at the end of the conversation with Samantha, and I'm getting choked up again. So I am asking you personally for a favor. Share this episode of Raving Coaches with not only the wonderful coaches in your life, which we would love, but with those parents who need the support that Samantha can help provide. Samantha, I'm so glad that you're joining us on today's episode of Raving Coaches. Thank you for being here.
I am so excited to be here. I have listened to your podcast for a while and I love it. So I'm super excited. Thank you for having me.
Fantastic. Thanks for being an awesome listener. I appreciate that. So tell us a little bit about you and the coaching that you do.
Yeah, so I'm a board certified music therapist. I've been doing music therapy for about 13 years, and I specialize in helping children and adults who are neurodivergent. So those on the autism spectrum, ADHD, OCD, sensory processing issues, all of that kind of stuff. That's what I specialize in working with. And throughout the years, I've noticed that parents really need coaching. They don't know how to parent a neurodivergent child. They have questions. They don't know what neurodivergent means. They don't know what the diagnosis means. And so they really just want education about the different things about autism and ADHD and that kind of stuff. And so I've started a coaching practice in addition to music therapy. And then my company also does behavioral therapy. And I started coaching to help those parents who maybe their child doesn't have a diagnosis yet, so they don't have the Medicaid resources that you get when you get a diagnosis. And they want a cost-effective, I'll say, option to get the resources that they need. So that's what I really help parents with, is just getting resources, understanding the diagnosis, understanding their child's behaviors.
So I think a lot of the coaches that are going to be listening, a lot of our audience is going to have some understanding of what neurodivergence means. But can you wrap up for us in, you know, like a way that we can understand what is neurodivergence?
Yeah, so people are generally, the way they classify people, I say every brain is different, but in this world, they say you're either neurotypical or you're neurodivergent. And neurodivergent is just a different way of thinking. So you might have autism. The diagnoses that go with this are autism, ADHD, sensory processing disorder, central auditory processing disorder, vision processing disorders, just a different way of thinking. So, and then neurotypical people are what we think of in the general population. Yep. Is that a good answer?
Yep. Yeah. Nope. That's and so for the audience who's listening, and I've already talked to Samantha about this and already cleared it with family members. I am a mom of at least one neurodivergent child. So my 15-year-old, we knew from very early, from probably the time he was two, that he was on the autism spectrum. Back in those days, it was Asperger's syndrome was, you know, keen to be called. My husband, or wasband, so former husband, was also on the Asperger's spectrum. Not diagnosed, self-diagnosed. He found a book about it after one of my adult friends started talking about her new diagnosis as having Asperger's, or on the autism spectrum, as we would call it now. I was asking her questions, and I was like, what about this? What about this? What about that? She's like, yeah, why do you keep asking these questions? I was like, you're describing my husband. And she was like, oh, I am describing him. And so we found a book about it written from the perspective of someone who had autism, and it became like his Bible. Like, it helped him understand his whole life. And at that point, he was already in his 30s, but he never had that early diagnosis. So when our second son came along, I, as a mom, didn't know whether I was comparing my two kids, because Logan was different than Jesse. But is Logan just different than Jesse, my older one, or is Logan different? And I had a community, and the perfect community that was with me at the time, of people who had kids on the spectrum and people who had kids who were blind and, you know, had access, knew how to access resources and knew how to, I had the perfect set of women in my life at that point, and was able to get my son and the therapies he needed, an educational diagnosis of autism, and then eventually we pursued the medical diagnosis of autism and an unspecified anxiety disorder, which has probably since evolved to with OCD tendencies. So that's my Logan. And when I saw that what you did, and I talked with him today, and I said, I am interviewing a music therapist who specializes in people, you know, and parents who are neurodiverse. And he went, oh, that's amazing. and that I asked permission to be able to discuss him on the show today, because for him, I said, what's one thing as a mom that you wish I understood better, and that our friend Samantha might be able to help me understand about you and your music? My music is me and my life and is all of me. Okay. So that's what he wanted me to understand even more. So to frame that into a question for you, Miss Samantha, how does music therapy, or the incorporation of music for neurodivergent children and adults, how is that different than, or yeah, how's it different than for neurotypicals?
I don't know how it's different for neurotypicals, but I can say music can create a safety zone. So people who are neurodivergent often like routines. They like things to be the same. They like to have the same things done. And that can create a safety zone for them where they feel safe. And if they're feeling dysregulated, so they're feeling like they're out of control in their body, then they can listen to that music and they can calm down because they know exactly what's going to happen in the music. There's no surprises. And I often recommend to people that they make playlists. So when you're sad, what music do you want to listen to when you're sad? What music do you want to listen to when you're angry? What music do you want to listen to when you're happy? And make playlists for those. So when you're feeling those emotions, you can go to those songs and then you will feel safe. You can start to feel calm again. You can feel peaceful again when you're feeling all the dysregulation, when you feel like everything's too much. I listened to this video of this guy who was like, people often ask me what autism is like. And it's just, think of being overstimulated all the time. And then times it by 100, times it by 1,000, because I notice everything, I hear everything, I see everything, the lights are too bright, it's too loud. And so I think just having those playlists for yourself can really calm your body down when you're feeling that overstimulation. You can put noise canceling headphones on. You can put, you know, the things that they sleep with and not to knock out the light. And I got diagnosed with ADHD last year. So I was a late diagnosed woman. My whole life, I felt like I was not the same as other people. But I can say I always went back to music. I always played the piano. My mom said she knew exactly how I was feeling because of how I was playing the piano. I could take the same song and I would play it happy and I would play it sad and I would play it angry and just take the same exact song. But so she would know when to come in to the room that I was practicing in and be like, okay, what happened at school today that's making you so angry right now? Or what good thing happened that you're so happy about? So I think that's where music can come in for people who are neurodivergent and people who are neurotypical, but more so for people who are neurodivergent who are looking for that way to create peace in their lives when everything feels overstimulating.
Yeah. Yeah. My son, we share a Spotify account. And I had to pull up to see where his playlist is up to now. I like the idea of separating the playlists out, and I will share that with him because right now the Logan playlist in Spotify is 17 hours and 59 minutes long of music that, and it's very eclectic, right? It is everything from classical, especially like the theme songs for like the Marvel movies that he likes or for some of the cartoon movies that he likes. AJR, he's a big fan of AJR. Doesn't want to go to a concert. I've asked him, would you like, oh, no. He just wants to listen to and know every AJR song that exists, you know, to the music that I play, which is a lot of like 90s, R&B, shake your booty kind of music. That's in his playlist too. He's got a little bit of everything in there. And the playlist, as you're talking about, that's why I see him scrolling, looking for very specific songs sometimes. So yes, he got, because he has some OCD tendencies, he got so into music listening because it can't be, it, music, I understood. Logan's been in therapy off and on forever and ever and ever. I'm a big fan of bringing in the helpers, right? Finding the helpers and bringing them into the world. So music was one of his calming tools and one of his recentering tools for a long time with his therapist. And however, I started to pay attention to the time tracking of how much, and he was listening to something like 8 to 9 hours of Spotify time every day. And I was like, babe, this might be a little too much.
Yeah, that's a lot. So,
right. So I started to put some restrictions on, because it was starting to kind of, I watched his grades dropping a little bit, right? And because there just wasn't any regulation on, and it was becoming a little obsessive. So, so that was the other thing that he wanted me to know was that I think, cause I think right now he's like at like an hour and a half or 2 hours. And he's like, I think it's a little too little right now, maybe like an additional 30 minutes. And so preparing for this podcast and having the conversation with him, let me know, kind of open up a conversation also inside of our house. So I love that. I love the work that you're doing. Thank you for doing that.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome. Tell me about working with those parents of kids potentially on either who have been diagnosed already or who they suspect is on the spectrum. What are some of the unique challenges that those parents kind of are facing or are coming up against that you can help coach them through?
I think that for the most part, parenting a neurodivergent child is very different than parenting a neurotypical child. And understanding the diagnosis and what it means, I think a lot of parents don't understand what the diagnosis means and they go back to traditional parenting instead of implementing maybe some different strategies for your neurodivergent child, especially kids who have pathological demand avoidance, which is just, it's just a profile within autism. So you get diagnosed with autism. Not everyone that has autism has PDA, which is what it's called. But everyone with PDA has autism. So I think parents have a unique challenge that, especially with PDAers, if you tell them to do something, they take that as an attack. They don't feel safe anymore. And it's not that they don't want to do what you're asking of them. It's that they literally cannot. Their body is not letting them do it. So I think just understanding that, you take a very different approach to parenting. For example, my son has autism. He has PDA. If I go up to him and I say, "Why are you mad right now?" He shuts down instantly. He starts crying. He's like, he will not talk. He'll just be like, I hate that sound. But I'm like, I just want to know how to help you. That's all I want to get from him is, how can I help you? But if you come at him head on and address things head on, he will shut down immediately. So if I say, "I notice that you're angry right now. I notice that you're sad. I notice that you seem upset by this thing that happened," then he's more likely to talk to me rather than just shutting down.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, I think that's one of the challenges, is that they just process information differently. Yeah. Neurodivergent people process information differently. And once you understand that, and once you understand how your child processes information, then you can get the tools you need to help them be their most successful and your most, and feel successful yourself.
Right. Yes. As a mom who's kind of gone through this for a while, I notice that there's two different, well, and there's probably lots of different types of parents, but in regards to this, in regards to, right, like the meltdown stage or the this avoidance behaviors, some of these extra spicy moments that our neurodivergent kids can have, there's two different types of parent. There's the parent that is worried about who's looking, right? Because I see that a lot in the chat. Like, my kid had a meltdown at Walmart today and everybody was staring at me. And there are parents who I've never noticed anyone staring at us during a meltdown, because I didn't look around to find out who was looking at us during a meltdown, because my attention had been focused on, oh boy, right? Like, boy, there's something going on here. And so I think that speaks to the parent behavior and to some things that are going on inside for those parents about the non-typical, right, or the different behaviors that are pretty common with kids who are on the spectrum. And then what that means, I think, maybe about the parent themselves. Have you noticed a similar trend?
Yeah, so I've noticed that parents are either, just like you said, they're worried about what everyone else is thinking, or they're so wrapped up in what their child is doing that they don't even care what anyone else is thinking. And I think that's where coaching can come in too, that you can give them the confidence that what they're doing is the right thing. And then they don't have to worry so much about what their mom or the random person in the store or other family members are thinking about their parenting, because I'm not teaching the traditional way to parent. We're focusing on positive strategies, positive reinforcement, really building the connection and relationship with your child in a way that they can understand it and you can understand it. And so just one tangent that you reminded me of, with the meltdowns, another thing for parents to think about, is it a sensory meltdown or is it a behavioral meltdown? So if your child is having a sensory meltdown, once you fix the sensory need, it will stop. But if they're just having a tantrum because you didn't buy them a candy in the store, then that's not going to stop when the sensory is put back together. You know, like they're just having a typical behavior because they're a child and you said no to them.
Exactly. You know?
So I think that's another really important thing for parents to remember is, why is your child having the meltdown in the store? Is it because the lights are way too bright? Is it because someone passed them and accidentally brushed their arm? Is it because there's too much noise there? Is the radio too loud? Just all the different things that it could be. Or are they just having a typical child tantrum because they didn't get their way?
Yeah. You know, when Logan was little, I do remember checking in with some of the other parents and some of the other adults in my world. So there was a time where I was concerned about a specific, what I thought would be a regulator for him. I'm part of a religious community, and we have these in the summertime, we have these large religious gatherings, usually in like a hockey state arena kind of thing, but probably somewhere between 1,000 and 3,000 people. Super hard for Logan, right? Smells, sounds, visual stimuli, echo of the auditoriums, hard for the little baby man. And he was a guy that regulated through a lot of movement too. And mm-hmm. these are kind of sit down, be quiet, chill events. I knew that if I brought an electronic game, right, if I had a game on my phone that he could play, he would chill. However, in the community that I was in, that was not really a typical thing for parents to do, especially at these. It's like, you want your children to engage and follow along and whatever. You don't just hand them a video game on the phone. And so I remember checking in with a few other parents and even talking to my dad about it. And because I wanted to make sure that I wasn't going to create the, but he's a game. Kind of thing for the other parents around me. And every single one of them, which was about me, right? Me not wanting to create a situation for other people. When I actually talked to the parents to be able to calm my own challenges or they were all like, oh, I don't care. He is a special circumstance. You do whatever you need to do. Like, that is fine. And just being able to have that conversation and get the worry out of my head and into an actual question in the community was super helpful for myself to be able to go, okay, this might not be a forever thing. And it's not. He's 15 years old. He sits, pays attention, does all the things at this point, doesn't need a blanket over his head, doesn't need noise-canceling headphones anymore because he's found other ways to regulate. But for a period of time, all of those things were part of our life during those, you know, at those kind of events.
Yeah, and that's okay. That's great that he found a way, or you found a way to help him regulate.
Yeah.
Kids definitely need that. So, and community. I love that you had a community, and that's what I'm trying to give parents who don't have that community. Cause we have, we have a membership where parents can come and they can talk to each other. They can talk to me. They can ask questions. They can say, hey, this is going on. You know, what do I do? Or how would you do this? Cause that's what I hear a lot from parents is that they don't have that community and they don't know where to find one. And so if I can help them either join my community or go to a different community, like in Idaho, we have Idaho Autism Moms.
Yep.
I direct everyone to that Facebook group because you find community, you find answers, you can ask your questions. You know, someone will know the answer to your question. So I think community is huge.
Yep. Agreed. Completely agreed. It, especially when we are raising these unique little humans, that being able to ask a question or being able to go, there's a thing that's going on and I don't know why it's happening. And for me, I had a more, Now, I think my older son, who's 19, Jesse, he probably has just a little bit of ADHD going on that we're discerning now that he's moving towards creating his own routines and adulting in his own way instead of here's your routine, here's what you do. And, you know, like we're starting to find that there might be a little bit of that there. But it didn't affect his day-to-day life very much as a kid growing up. So I had what I thought was at that point a neurotypical and a neurodivergent. And having to walk that path of, gosh, I didn't have to do this with Jesse. I needed to have that community around.
Yeah.
So how does your community work? Is it a mostly online type community?
Yeah, it's online. I've tried to do in-person events and no one comes. So they're like, well, we don't have babysitters and there's no place for me to like have childcare at the place where I have it, you know? So online works better for people, it seems. So we just meet twice a month and just talk. And then you can obviously like put questions in the community, you know, like I have a portal space and you can put questions in there as needed and people can answer them. But I think just having a place to come and talk for an hour is really good for people.
Oh, for sure. For sure.
Yeah.
Right. And then, and the acceptance of, because the other thing that I noticed from within the community, there was, everybody's trying to, because it's our kids, we are trying to do right by our children. Mm-hmm. And with that comes some heightened emotions. So I noticed within even the autism communities that I was a part of that sometimes there would be these divisions that would start taking place of this is the right and only way. No, this is the right and only way around certain hot button issues. And I was just that middle of the road mama, like you get to make the decision for you and I have to make the decision for me, but we can talk about it. Like, I would love to hear your opinions of why you're choosing that path without the judgment. So how do you influence your community or kind of maybe moderate the community to deal with some of the big emotions that the parents are bringing in?
So I just ask that everyone be respectful and kind of like you said, you know, just you can agree to disagree. And if people get too emotional, you know, I make a comment, be like, let's rein it back in. Everyone nice. Has an opinion. I know in a lot of groups, in a lot of communities, they just don't allow certain topics to be talked about because they are so hot button issues. So I want people to be able to talk about whatever they want to talk about. But if it gets too emotional, I might make a comment and just say, hey, let's remember, we can all disagree. It's okay. You know, right. But yeah,
I love that.
Things get heated.
Yeah. We want to do right by our parent or by our kids. And as you know, one of the things that the Endotape formula has shown me over like so long, we have this possibility side of us. That's the part that we dream and we create ideas and it's our hero's journey and it's our purpose. Then we have this protection side of us. And when it comes to our kids, that protection side of us can be highly influential.
Yeah.
And can get
for sure.
real opinionated, real spicy, and very easily dig in, because what we don't understand, right, is that we're making whether or not, right, we'll make one up, whether or not I give my kids popsicles means something about me and how much I love them or how much I value them. And that's not what it's about, but that's what it feels like internally for a lot of people. And so it's just kind of an internal system that people don't quite right? The parents don't know how to regulate their protection side when it comes to those beautiful little babies of theirs. So I get that too. Have you noticed, knowing that a lot of autism or neurotypical qualities are genetically predisposed, have you noticed, like, I have seen sometimes that if there are parents who are not neurotypical, so parents who have autism, sometimes struggle with having kids who are on the spectrum or are not neurotypical as well. Have you noticed the same thing? And do you have any opinions of why that is, or what kind of comes up around that?
I think it's just a different type of thinking. So let's say I have a kid with autism and I have autism and I am a very rigid thinker. I'm not flexible in my thinking. So I think things should be done a certain way. But my child is also like that, and they are rigid in their thinking, and they think things should be done a certain way. And it is completely opposite to the way that I'm thinking. Like, that would be very hard to regulate yourself when your child is doing the direct opposite thing. And neither of you are wrong. It's just different.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that's where that comes in. So I had a family once who the mom was like, my husband has autism, not diagnosed, but she like diagnosed him.
Yeah.
She's like, and I have two boys with autism, and they all have opinions about how Christmas morning is supposed to go, and they're all different. And so I think that's where people have a hard time, is that like their version of neurodivergence is different than their child's, and they don't know what to do with that, because in their head there's one way of doing things, and that's not what their child thinks. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah, fascinating. That's a great perspective. Thank you for sharing that with me. So you have worked in music therapy and you've worked with a lot of neurodivergent kids. What led you, and you talked a little bit about what led you to start creating this coaching space of helping these parents. How has that shift gone for you from running more of a therapy, right, to more of a coaching program?
Yeah, so I still do music therapy. I will never let that go.
Yep.
And the coaching part, I feel like music therapy is more centered on the kid. I work mostly with the kid, and then I tell the parents what we're doing and how they can do things at home. And then if the parent has questions, I talk to them and, you know, we work things out. But with coaching, the parents and I are both focused on the kid, but I'm more focused on the parents and how they can feel successful in their parenting and building that relationship with their kid. And so sometimes in music therapy, like, I never talk to some of the parents. Like, I never talk to them because they're either, like, they don't want to talk to me, or they're not available. But I think with coaching, I'm just more focused on the parents, mm-hmm. and helping them figure out positive parenting strategies that they can use, helping them understand the diagnoses so that they can help their kid understand. It's not me working directly with the kid.
Yeah. You know, as an oracle endotype, one of your gifts is intuition, is helping other people trust their own knowingness, trust their own knowledge base, make those choices based on not only just external knowledge, but that internal guidance and that internal knowledge. So I think you're applying that very strongly in this avenue of coaching with the parents that you're working with. Is that something that you can overtly market to them, or is that kind of like one of those added benefits that we don't overtly market?
I haven't overtly marketed it to them, but I think it's a good idea to just be like, learn to trust yourself. Learn to trust yourself and know that what you're doing is the good thing, the right thing to do for you.
Yeah,
it might not be right for somebody else, but it's the right thing for you. It's the right thing for your child. I think that's where a lot of parents don't trust themselves, and where they're like, oh, I'm failing as a parent because I don't know the right thing to do. And I'm like, you do know the right thing to do inside. It's just trusting yourself to know that that's the right thing.
Yes. Yes. One of my friends, one of my coach friends, Olivia Norton, she's been on the show before. She went off the other, she is neurodivergent. She's ADHD. And she talked about this modality that she had learned where you have like three decision-making like parts of your body, right? There's the head and what we think. There's the heart and this, what we feel. And there's that gut. And she went off and did this whole thing about making decisions with these three parts of us and majority rules. So even if your heart and your gut say, yep, and your head's going, no, you got to go, you got to follow along that process. And I was like, oh man, when she got done with her little rant, I was like, do you know how many wrong decisions in life this would have saved me to understand it, to actually trust that it's not just all, because I'm a very, right, I like to have knowledge. I'm a very knowledge-based decision maker. But
yeah,
paying attention to that all of us portion is so huge. And I think you're helping those parents trust all of them in this process. Yeah.
That's definitely the goal.
Yeah, that's fabulous. Fabulous. I love that for you. So one of the challenges that you had said that you struggled with when, let me just go to my notes here for a second. Knowing how in the marketing, well, you had mentioned two challenges, a personal and a marketing. So I'd love to be able to talk with you about those just a little bit. Let's talk about that personal challenge of that that ever so common, right? Imposter syndrome, and starting the coaching and being comfortable with charging what you need to for that coaching. So how has that shown up for you? And what have you how have you been able to work through some of that already?
Well, working with business coaches has helped me because they're like, what are you doing? You need to be able to feed yourself. Like, you're not doing this as a hobby. So charge what you're worth. And when I put out the price, I have a course coming out soon. And when I decided on that price, I wanted to throw up. And I was like, that, no. Like, am I going to help people? But then I think about it and I'm like, I'm going to help people. This will help people and it's worth, you know, the price. But I just always feel like I never have enough knowledge. I'm always trying to learn more and just get more knowledge because I feel like I never have enough and that I'm not going to serve people how I should be serving them and that I don't have enough knowledge to serve them, even though I've had multiple people tell me, like, you know a lot. You need to, like, tone it down a little bit to get on people's level who haven't been in the industry for 17 years, you know?
Right.
So I have so many like certifications and classes because I'm always looking to learn more to finally make myself not have that imposter syndrome. Like finally feel like I actually know what I'm talking about. Even though when I am talking to people, I feel like I know what I'm talking about. But then after the conversation, I'm like, ooh, you know?
Sure. So. Yeah. Is the question that kind of thing that comes up is like, how did they receive that? I wonder if that was too much for them. I wonder if that was too, what did they think about it? Kind of around that kind of a question for yourself?
Yeah. And I think that comes from the ADHD that I have and rejection sensitivity dysphoria that I just assume no one likes me. And that no one likes what I have to say.
Well,
so
and
that
also
comes from that.
Yeah. Also, as part of your endotype, in a very specific part of you, being your that on that protection side, and what I call the parent piece, that's connected to love and to that heart connection with people. And so that parent piece of us, sometimes we can hear as a judgmental adult or a judgmental parent, like, do you really think that you connected with them? Do you really think that they like you? You know, like or when you said that thing, they probably didn't like you at all, which, right, leads to that feeling of rejection that you're experiencing. But what the parent piece of you really wants you to be aware of is it's trying to protect you and to guide you to places that you do connect. So if you're experiencing a space where it's like, oh, I didn't feel a connection there, or like, I don't think they liked me, that's the knowledge your parent wants you to have to not go back there. It means nothing about you. It means that's not for you. Let's go over here where there is connection, where you do feel that heart space. So a lot of times we just hear that parent piece of us wrong. And by moving past that, we can move past some of that imposter syndrome that creeps up for us and that feeling of they're not going to like me, especially for the Oracle types.
Yeah.
And then one of the challenges that you had said is talking about marketing, which is one of my favorite subjects to talk about. I've been doing just a ton of work with coaches in marketing and finding their ideal messages. A challenge I know that you will have is similar to the challenge I will have, because the way that our endotype is set up, our brain is set up to gather information and wisdom first. We want to understand before we can move forward to the why, to the feelings, to the action. So when we sell, a lot of times our marketing comes out very heady, very information filled, and not motivation filled. Would you say that that's an accurate statement?
100%. Yes.
Yeah, that and that's because that's how we make choices, mm-hmm. right? Like if I'm gonna buy a new laundry soap, I'm confessing it myself, right? If I'm gonna buy a new laundry soap, there's probably a good 15 to 20 minutes of research that goes into whether or not I should switch from the one that I'm using to a different one, and what the effects of the environment and of my, you know, like financially and all of that's how we make choices. But it's not how everybody makes choices.
Yeah.
And so we have to be ourselves and bring that into our branding, that information, because it is part of our brand. You do know a lot. But through storytelling and through either storytelling, fact-based logic, we need to also tug on those heartstrings. So for us, sometimes it is about writing the marketing and then re-engineering it to put the heart stuff up towards the front. Because normally, if you're like me, the heart stuff eventually comes out after all the logic stuff does.
Yeah, yeah.
Sometimes it's just bringing that up to the front with a little bit of a story or a little bit of information first. What other struggles do you think that you're having in getting those parents to want to purchase those courses from you?
I just don't talk about it. I don't want to appear salesy. Mm-hmm. So I just don't talk about my offers, and then nobody knows about them. I'm like, why is no one signing up? And one of my friends was like, because no one knows that you have it. No one knows that there's something there to sign up for. So I make reels every day for Instagram, right? And my friend was like, do you ever say, hey, here's my lead magnet. Here's my freebie. Here's something, you know, for you to download, whatever you want to call it. And I said, no. She's like, then how do you know you don't have a good lead magnet if you're not talking about it? Like, nobody knows it's there. So that's my biggest thing, is that I just don't want to appear over salesy. And so I just don't talk about things. I give information to people. I share all my information and I'm like, this is, you know, what you should know, but I don't be like, and if you want more information, or, you know, if you want to know about this, download this or join my membership or do the course or whatever.
So with the new course that's coming out, what is the, what's the topic? What are they going to learn in this new course?
So it's called Parenting Your Neurodivergent Child. And it just goes through how, not how, but the things that make neurodivergent kids neurodivergent. So, and things that they might do. So we'll have topics like, what is neurodivergence? What is masking? So masking is when you do things to appear neurotypical so people won't know you're neurodivergent. So we'll go into that. We'll go into like sensory regulation techniques, coping skills. And then I also tie in positive discipline strategies. Positive discipline is just a curriculum that was made, I think, in the 90s or something, but I really love it for how to create positive connections with your kids. And so it's kind of a hybrid course between positive discipline and learning about neurodivergent topics.
Awesome. That's great. What is, for the parents that don't get to experience your course, what's the price they pay for not knowing these things?
I think it's just overwhelm and frustration. Like, you're frustrated being a parent. You don't feel like you have a connection with your kid. You have no idea what your kid is doing or why they're doing it. And so then you just become overwhelmed and don't know what to do.
And I think it's probably more than overwhelmed. Would you say that, would, is it fair to say that by not understanding these things and not knowing how to parent and discipline, that there's a percentage of these parents that feel like they're failing their kids?
Yeah, I've heard a lot of parents say, I feel like I'm failing my kid. I don't know what to do for them. Like, I don't know how to help them. And I think this course helps you understand how to help them, because not every strategy is going to be right for you and your family, but you can choose what strategies to use.
Yeah. And what's the price paid by the kids of these parents who haven't yet taken your course, they don't yet know, what's the price the kids are paying?
I can speak from personal experience. Like, my parents were amazing. I'm not saying they weren't, but I felt so alone as a kid and that nobody understood me. I didn't know why I was so, I thought I was weird, you know, in air quotes. And I think if the parents understand what's going on, they can help their kid understand what's going on.
Yeah. So then those things, I would challenge you to take those as motivate, like write those out. Those, the price the parents who don't know about my course pay is, the price the kids of these parents pay is. And get really, really, really detailed about it and emotionally connected to it. Because I think if you really connect to that emotion, every time that you don't want to seem salesy, or every time that you don't want to, right, come off too aggressive, you're going to go, but it doesn't matter because they have to know. So yeah. when our passion rises, when we get so driven by the mission and by the, this is the change that I want to make in the world, or in the lives of these children, when that becomes bigger than our, like, oh, I don't want to be a salesperson. A lot of times that I don't want to be a salesperson can drop away and can start lowering, right? Because this just takes, the passion starts taking it over. So
yes.
that would be a little project maybe for you to work on inside your coaching business.
Yeah, definitely. I'm going to work on that.
Awesome. Great. You know, one of the things that we have been doing with our guests recently is asking if they have any like coaching advice or an action, a step coaches can take, something that's helped you, something that you notice other coaches may need, but a little challenge. So the Samantha challenge for this week. And is there something that you would like to see more coaches take on or try out this week inside of their coaching business?
I always think of the coaches who haven't started coaching yet. So that's my challenge, is if you're listening to this and you want to be a coach, just start. You don't have to have the perfect opt-in. You don't have to have the perfect CRM or the perfect system. You can just start and not have to worry about all that. Because you know how long I have been thinking about starting, like, my membership? It's been a few years, and I just started it last year I started it, and I could have been so much farther along, like, in understanding how to help people if I just would have started when I wanted to and not worried about, like, having the perfect sales page and the perfect everything, you know? So yeah, that's what I would
say. And even sometimes, and I'll expand on that challenge just a little bit. Sometimes it's about having the perfect price. I had an opportunity recently to do a little mastermind with a coach who had great prices set to her programs, right? She had worked with a business coach, came up with some great programs, came up with some great prices, her brand pretty on track. She was pretty clear in her explanation of what she wants to do and who she wants to do it for. And I said, awesome. How many people have you coached around this so far? Nobody. Oh, have you thought about doing a pilot program or some beta testers that maybe there's a couple that you do for free. Maybe there's a couple that you do for a lower price, but to start doing it, because in the doing there's learning.
Yeah.
So I love that. I love that. You know, like, not necessarily needing to get that full payment, knowing that that's what we're working for. Because I want all the coaches to get paid fully for their coaching programs. And sometimes it starts with a pilot program or a beta tester that's a little less income so that you can get that experience and case study testimonial from it. So
yeah. For sure.
I love that for the Samantha challenge this week. That's fantastic. Yeah. Well, we have talked about all kinds of different things. And I am sure that every coach who is listening knows a family that has a neurodivergent child. I can think of many, right? Because I'm in that community. So yeah. Where's the best place for us to be able to connect with you? Directly for ourselves or to send some people that we know your way?
It would be my website. So just BoiseMusicTherapyCompany.com. You can message me, you can schedule a consultation, whatever you want.
Love it. Love it. Thank you so much. We'll drop that link into the show notes. Thank you so much for talking with me about your expertise and your business, diving in and sharing about your business. So thanks so much for being here.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Thank you for joining us. I hope that you are taking away some amazing things. One, I might ask you for a second favor. If you've listened all the way through to this episode, I might ask you for a second favor. Here's the favor I'm going to ask you for. Every brain does work differently. Hello, endotype formula. Would you like to know how your brain works and how that connects to what you crave and to your body? Endotype formula. I get all brains work different. One of the things people say when a parent is going, yeah, my kid has ADHD or my kid's neurodivergent, they'll go, everybody might have a little bit of that. Please stop saying that. I know that you believe it is normalizing. And for a lot of us, it's just really not normalizing because our life, our life doesn't feel normal. It doesn't feel normal, friends. Friends. If you knew some of the food routines that we have had and continue to have in our family, the amount of therapy, the amount of, oh, my friends, our life does not feel normal. So it is okay for it to not be normal. Please acknowledge with us that our life is not normal. And for you coaches who are listening, please take the Samantha challenge. Do it. Do it. So whether you are a brand new coach and you're like, oh, I'm kind of thinking about maybe, do it. And for those of you who are coaches who have this big thing that's been put on your heart, you know that thing? What's the thing? The thing that you haven't told anybody about yet. My thing for a long time was a podcast. So tell somebody about it. Find a way to get it into your business plan and start it. If you are struggling to figure out how to fit it into your business plan and how to make the thing that's been laid upon your heart make sense for your business, reach out to me. We'll have a conversation and we'll see if we can't brainstorm and mastermind on that for just a little bit. Look forward to talking with you soon.